Today's episode is brought to you by Dedicated Magazine. What up? So as we know it, Dedicated Magazine's got their build-off going on right now. The Riviera, 1965. And for those of you participating in that, just remember, everything's got to be in. Picture submitted, done, completed, June 15th, midnight. Make sure to look out for the next build-off. Volume 4, coming in the near future. Keep up to date with all the news at Dedicated Magazine on Instagram. And if you want to visit their webpage, that's dedicatedmagazine.com. Yo, what up? Welcome back to another episode of Scale Riders Podcast, episode 70. I'm 65 Lokes, your host. My guest for this episode is Wes Salazar. Let's go ahead and give Wes a call and let's get into this model talk.
Hey, what's up, Edgar?
Hey, what's up, Wes? How you doing?
Good, bro. Just chilling, taking a break from some bench time right now.
Oh, that's tight. So do you do mostly your work on the weekends or during the week?
Whenever I can get time, bro. Yeah. A lot on the weekends, mostly like in the morning and stuff. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little bit like in the evenings after work during the week, but mostly on weekends.
Yeah. Oh, that's dope, man. No, that's cool. What's the hour difference from where you're at?
Right now it's about 2 hours. So okay. We're at 10 o'clock right now.
Yeah, right on. Dang. So how long has it been since you moved out there?
Actually, just past 7 years, April 14th.
Yeah, dang. Do you miss California?
A few things, bro. Like the weather, for sure.
Yeah. I bet.
The weather, a lot of my friends and stuff are still out there in California too. Mm. So it was a big adjustment though.
Yeah. No, that's cool. And then, remember we were talking before, you had mentioned, your father was from Oxnard.
Yeah. Yeah. He was born and raised.
Yeah. That's dope. That's pretty cool. So you got to see like a little bit of it or when you were out here?
Oh yeah, we used to go up like to Oxnard and Ventura area quite a bit when I was a kid. Visit his family and his a couple brothers and sisters that were there as well. And I got to experience Oxnard quite a bit when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And then when you started to get into car modeling, were you doing it then, like when you were a kid when you were out there, or?
No, actually. I started building when I was right around 8 or 9 years old, was when I first got into it. But it wasn't like anything big. It was kind of like, hey, I want to, try this new hobby. You're a kid. You want to try something different here and there. You see all this cool stuff. But more so got into building heavily when I was about 16 or 17. So I was still, going to Oxnard and stuff, but not quite as much then,
Nice. And you also worked at Pegasus Hobbies.
Yeah. Yes, sir. I was at Pegasus from late July of 2010 to right around March of 2012, right before I moved.
Wow. So prior to working there, you were just visit like as a just as a customer, and then over time you were just like, maybe I'll work here, or how'd that work out?
Well, it's kind of a funny story. I started going there probably about 2 years before, so about 2008 or so, when I started getting bigger, more into the models and stuff, and my dad was kind of getting into it too a little bit, and he's like, hey, let's go check out Pegasus. They were already at their spot in Montclair at the time. So we went there, in like 2008, and it was an eye opener. I'd never been to a hobby shop that big or anything that had that much stuff. And, you know, I got to know Joe working there, Altered Works. You know, he's been there for a long time, and got to talk with him, and we established a good relationship. So over the years, I started coming back more and more. And then in 2010, I believe, June of 2010, they had their second model contest there at Pegasus, back in the back stock room. And it just turned out to be one of those things that, you know, I was there hanging out at the show, and eventually it got so busy that Joe kind of pulled me aside and said, hey, you want to kind of help out up here at the counters? And that's pretty much how it started, man.
Yeah, that's cool. Needed some backup. Like, hey, come through. That's pretty dope.
Pretty much, because I learned a lot from Joe starting, you know, just visiting and talking with him. And by that time, you know, I'd already kind of knew where everything was at in the store. And, you know, so people are like, hey, you got this and this. It's like, oh, yeah, it's back here. And, you know, I would help him out. And right after that is when I got offered the job. So,
yeah, that's tight. I remember like back then, like buying the Pegasus wheels and just having the packaging in the yellow, you know, and mm-hmm. and looking at that, and then also seeing buying wheels from like Hopping Hydros. But then I remember when I looked online, Pegasus, I think I was trying to look for more wheels, and then their listing comes up, like their store, and I'm like, is that the same company? Like, I wasn't sure if the Pegasus in Montclair was producing those wheels. So then it wasn't until I made the trip out there that I was like, oh, dang, this is them. This is crazy. I had no idea. Like, I was just like tripping out on that. I was like, dang. And the funny thing too is, like, when you walk in, you have all like the RC stuff on the left-hand side, and then the right-hand side's all the scale model, like all the kits and everything. So I would always go on that side. And then one time I took my friend over there, and my friend likes to take his time and look through everything when he goes to stores. So, but normally for me, when I go over there, it's just like, I kind of already know what I want, or kind of the section, what I'm looking for. And I get the stuff and I take off. But my friend was like just taking his time. So it made me, you know, walk around the store with him. And then we ended up going to like the other side with all the RC stuff. And then I was like, oh man, I never even seen this side. And it was just like so much stuff, dude.
Yeah. A lot of people, like I said, they don't realize how much stuff they have there. And if they go to the one side, like you said, the models and everything, they don't go to the other side. So when they see it, it's just like, wow, you know. But it's a pretty bad place, man. I haven't come across another hobby shop like it. That's for sure.
Yeah, nah, especially now, nothing like that. And then what's cool too is they have that track in the back for the people that like to race.
Oh yeah.
I was like, dude, that looks crazy. Like, I didn't even know that it was back there. There's a lot of stuff I just didn't even know about. I guess I just wasn't taking the time. But when I started really like looking, I'm like, dang, there's a lot of stuff here.
Oh yeah.
And were you mostly there like during the week or weekends, or what was your schedule like working there?
Let's see. I think it was mostly like Tuesday through Sunday, I want to say. But like a couple of those days were like part-time days, like half days or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it was a pretty full schedule, because back then, I mean, you know, it was pretty much busy every day of the week. You know, and especially on weekends, you know, sometimes, especially when like the contests or shows were going on. I know I remember working when the Grand National Roadster Show was going on. I'd have to kind of figure out what day I could go take off to go to the show, because I had to work both Saturday and Sunday, and I could take one day off and not both. So it was kind of hard to, you know, enter the competition and work at the same time. So
yeah, dang. That's crazy. How it's not that far though, huh? The where they have the Grand National Roadster Show to Montclair?
No, probably maybe 10 minutes at most.
Oh, that's super close right there.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just, you know, it's just hard with the hours though. Like when the show opened, it was like the same time that, you know, the Pegasus opened on the weekend. So it's like, well, okay, if I want to go, I got to figure out this day. And then if I enter any models, you know, back then when I did, I had to have my friends pick them up for me on Sunday, you know? So,
oh, yeah. Cause it's kind of a, when you go there, it's kind of a little mission to even get in. You know, you got to go through you got to pay for the parking, and you got to drive to whatever is open. And, and then you got to like make your way in and walk underneath that tunnel. I don't know. It just seems like a mission just to go real quick. But it is a dope show. I do like that. That show is pretty fun.
Yeah, that's probably been one of the better like real car shows with a model show that's out in California right now.
Yeah.
I've been going since, you know, I was a little kid, like even before I started entering models in there. And, you know, and ever since then, it was like, that's always been the show that I've always tried to get to every year. Even like now living in St. Louis, you know, I always try to fly out in January specifically for that show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like this year you were out here. So you came out to NNL West. And then you also were out for the Grand National Roadster show.
Right.
When you decide, like, let's say you're going to, like, let's say next year, do you, are you just pre-planning everything way ahead of time, or is it kind of like a last minute thing that you're figuring out?
Well, the way that it worked this year, normally the Grand National show, that's always a given. That's always like pre-planned, you know, even like right after this year, it's like, okay, I already figured out when it's next year and what I'm going to do. With NNL West, it was kind of funny. Talking with my buddy, Al Camacho, and I stay with him when I come out there, and he's like, well, you know, NNL West is Saturday. He said, you know, we normally go to the Grand National Show both Saturday, Sunday, walk around Saturday, enter our models and come back Sunday. He's like, you know, we could do NNL West Saturday and come back Sunday. I'm like, oh man, that's a long drive. But I said, you know what? Why not? Let's do it. That was actually my first time to NNL West, if you can believe that.
Oh, no way. That's cool. This was my second time going there to NNL West. Last year I was like tripping out. I was like, oh dang, there's all these tables, you know, there's so many cars. And then, it was cool because I got to meet a lot of the friends on Instagram that live in Northern California too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was a good show, man. I mean, I just never had the chance, you know, to make it up there when I was living in California due to whatever circumstances. But, you know, it's cool when you get to meet people, like you said, like from Instagram or even Facebook and stuff like that, you put a name to the face.
Yeah.
And, you know, I met a lot of people too from Instagram there, and, you know, like you and I know Juan, Vision 124.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Was there, and just a lot of guys, man. It's really cool to finally, you know, finally get to talk and, you know, hang out and stuff. Yeah. And, you know, catch up with people too, like Mario, Terror Chaos, caught up with him for the first time in about 6-7 years.
Oh, man, that's a long time.
Yeah, well, he was the one that actually I got hired on at Pegasus after I left.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of gave him a good word and put in a good word for him, and he got the job. He basically replaced me when I moved out to St. Louis.
Yeah. Oh man, that's pretty cool though that you gave him that word though. You know.
Oh yeah, he learned a lot of stuff too, and I said, hey, he's the best guy for the job, you know?
Yeah, no, that's tight. Yeah, for NNL West, Vision 124 ended up staying with me as well when he came out. Like, I mean, we linked up over there, but then once the show was over, the plan as well was to go to the Roadster show. And it was funny because I was like, we were just talking about stuff, and then he was planning on coming out, and I was just telling him, like, watch, check out this plan. It might sound a little crazy, but it might be possible. And I was just saying a scenario of, like, meeting up there, driving back, like, right after NNL West is done.
Right.
So this way we get home late at night, you know, go to sleep, wake up, and then go to the Grand National Roadster show the next day. And then from there, make a trip to like Pegasus too, and all this stuff. And it mm-hmm. at the moment it sounded kind of like, I don't know, it's like too much stuff, but we managed to do it at the end. Like it happened, but man, I was pretty tired, but it was cool though. I thought it was fun.
I think that weekend I got into California on Friday. I think from Friday to Sunday in 72 hours, I think I only slept like a total of 10 hours. Dang. That whole time. So it was crazy, man. It was crazy.
Did you end up driving up? Did you land in California up there already in Northern, or were you out here down south and then drove up?
No, actually, I landed in Ontario.
Oh, okay. And,
met up with my buddy there, got a rental car, and hung around Southern California for a little while, and then I think got maybe like 2 hours of sleep, and then we drove up to NNL West at 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and, nice.
Yeah, and got there, I think, right before they opened, like right around 8:30, 9 o'clock, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, did that whole show, and, you know, just like you said, there's a lot of stuff going on, so you're kind of like, you're overwhelmed and stuff. And we did that show, drove to my other friend's house who was up there as well, Mike, MO Customs on Instagram.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Drove to his house in Visalia that night, which was probably about a 4 or 5 hour drive, and then got up at 6 a.m. on Sunday. About 5:30, 6 a.m. on Sunday to drive down to the Grand National show.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't a whole lot of sleep between all that.
No, yeah. Did you drink coffee?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Coffee, energy drinks, whatever you could, man.
Yeah. Nah, definitely needed it right there. Did you end up making any purchases at the swap meet there at NNL West?
Quite a bit, actually. Mostly parts, little like stuff from like Hobby Design. That one table that was there had all the like Japanese stuff, the kits, and then like parts from Hobby Design, Studio 27. Bought quite a bit of stuff from him, and then from Art Lasky's table. Bought some stuff from him as well. Not too many kits though. Mainly because it's harder to travel back with kits than it is like small parts and stuff.
True. Yeah. Yeah. I was gonna ask you about that, about like the whole like traveling aspect when it comes to packing like your model cars. Do you mm-hmm. carry your cars like as your carry on, so this way it doesn't get tossed around in your luggage?
Oh yeah, definitely. Basically what I think you remember, I had it on the table there at the Grand National show. I have like a metal briefcase.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's insulated with, it's got foam inserts that I put in that I cut out to fit specific sizes of different models. So some are longer, some are shorter, some are wider. And then it's got another couple layers of foam on top of that. So they're pretty well protected. It's just kind of funny when you go through airport security and they look at you like, you know, what do you have in the briefcase?
Just put it there.
Yeah. Put it down. And they always look through it because they think it's like electronics or something.
Mm.
And they open it up and they're like, wow, that's not what we were expecting. I say, no, those are, you know, custom built cars. They're like, really? You build these? Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, you're good to go. But it's a good method, I think, because it's probably the best method I found to carry those. Just so, you know, even I put it up in the overhead inside the plane, and they don't get damaged. I've, knock on wood, luckily haven't had any damages or fatalities with any of my cars.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good method.
How many cars can you fit in that case?
That's the downside. That's about 5. And that's as long as they all can conform to the size of the foam inserts that I have in there.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
That's pretty cool though. Like 5, like if you think about it, like let's say, you know, it's like next year you're like, all right, I'm going to bring like let's, you know, cause you're building all the time and then you select like your top 5, like these are the ones I want to bust out with. Instead of bringing like all kinds of cars, now you're just like, cool, like down to 5.
Oh yeah, and two, it makes it nice because I've gone to shows, not necessarily out of town, but I've taken more than like 5 cars to a show sometimes, and man, that's a hassle trying to fill out all the information forms and, you know, just making sure you have everything right. And it's like, okay, yeah, limit it to 5, and that's a pretty good number.
Yeah.
You know?
It's funny you say that about the forms, because whenever, you know, you set up your cars first and then you have your forms, like, all right, let me fill them out. And it's funny because I know the questions are really basic, like what's the year, the make, or the name, or whatever, or details. And for some reason, I'm always like I see my car and I'm forgetting the year it is. Like, right. I'm like, what? I'm like, oh yeah. And then it's just funny. Like I get kind of stumped right there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's or you forget, like, you know, you put certain details in and then you forget to write those down and stuff. And I've done that before where it's like, I'll finish filling it out. I'll put it all on the table. And then I'm walking around and something reminds me, oh shoot, I didn't put that down on the paperwork. Yeah. So I got to run back and fill it out. And everybody's looking at you like, why are you touching the car? It's like, no, it's my car. Don't worry.
That's funny. Is there any shows in your area out there?
Well, in St. Louis and in Missouri alone, actually, there's only one local just straight model car show. And it's twice a year. It's actually coming up May 5th. And it's also in October. It's put on by a local club here. The MMVA is what they're called. But it's a smaller show at a community center. That's the only local show. Now, outside of Missouri, there's quite a few. The nice thing about being where I'm at is in any direction, I'm about 4 hours away from any state. So like Indiana, Kansas City, Kentucky, which all have major shows throughout the year. There's actually a big one in Kansas City coming up June 8th and 9th in Overland Park, the Heartland Nationals. And that's a major contest. I don't know if any of the guys out there have mentioned that one before
or not. Yeah, I've never heard of that one.
Yeah, it's big, man. It's big. It's about last year they had almost 500 models on the table.
Dang, that's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And that particular one brings in people from all over. I know NoCo Scale Auto was out there last year from Colorado. We've had a lot of guys come up from Texas for that show. That's probably one of the biggest ones of the year for this part of the Midwest region.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's basically like the Super Bowl show for the Midwest,
Midwest, nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool. Have you already kind of marked your calendar knowing like which ones you're going to attend?
Yeah. I pretty much do that usually at the beginning of the year. This year's a little bit harder for me because I'm actually getting married this year.
Oh, nice. So, congrats.
Thanks, bro. Getting married in August and kind of had to cut back on the show. So like I did, you know, California with the two shows, and then I'm doing Kansas City, the Overland Park show, but that's about the extent of the traveling I'm doing this year for shows. And until after the wedding, I'm going to try to go down to the NNL South in Atlanta, because that is in November, so it's after the wedding and everything. But
nice.
but up until now, beforehand, I was doing probably, try to think here, about 6 or 7 shows a year between California, Indiana, Kentucky, just all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what a lot of the guys say, man, you travel a lot for these shows. It's like, well, you kind of have to when there's nothing in your area.
Yeah, you're right. That's so true. Have you ever been to NNL East?
No, that's another one on the list.
Yeah.
That's one I've been marked down for quite a while, but it's just, again, with the timing with everything. you know, hopefully maybe next year or the year after that. That's, but it's definitely on the calendar for sure.
Dang, it's coming up, huh?
Yeah, I think the end of this month, right? Next weekend.
Yeah, yeah, because I know I've been seeing like the flyers for that, and I'm just like, I'm like, dang, that thing sounds like it's gonna be tight, that show.
Oh yeah, and I've heard like just from people that have been there, just how big that show is, and how many vendors, how many models people bring on the tables and stuff, and it's like that's got to be something you experience at least once.
Yeah,
you know.
Especially from what I've heard, the size that it is, it almost seems like it should be like a two day event, you know?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That's, to me, having that many models out there, it's like, you know, cause I was overwhelmed just with N&L West when I was up there. And I don't remember exactly what they said the count was, but you know, to hear the numbers they pull out there at the East, it's like, dang, you got guys coming out from everywhere for that show.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot. what they end up bringing out there. Which were you, did you spend a lot of time like going up and down the aisles looking at all the cars at the N&L West?
Oh, yeah. I think I took probably over 450 photos just at N&L West alone. So, yeah. I take pictures of everything. You know, I like every type of build style there is. You know, I'm not partial to one or the other. I build pretty much everything myself. So when I see stuff on the tables, I try to, you know, get inspiration and just, oh, hey, that's cool. Or, hey, that's an idea I never thought of trying before, you know, something like that.
Yeah. So, yeah. Cause I noticed, like on your cars, they're very diverse, all the like different styles. So, I get it that you learn something from each different style.
Oh yeah.
You know, and it just makes it better. Like next time you open up a kit, you know what you're getting into, and like you already know what to do next to it. Like you're not like stuck. Like I don't know what to do.
Right, right. No, it definitely opens up a whole new. Diversity with everything. And you know, like I know some guys build just strictly lowriders, some guys build strictly tuners. You know, I've done that before to where I getting stuck in one style of build, and after a while you just it burns you out pretty quick.
Yeah, you know? That's true.
At least this way, you know, you constantly get new ideas, and which can be a bad thing sometimes, because sometimes your mind doesn't shut off. You constantly have ideas, but
that's true. It's like you're at work or whatever. All you're thinking about is your model cars, or what you left pending. You know, like you're about to do something. You're like, oh, I gotta stop here. Then you take off, and you're like, man, I can't wait. Just give me like 30 minutes or an hour, and I want to get this thing done real quick.
No, exactly.
I was gonna ask you too. On your Instagram, you posted some of the splash paints that you got. Mm-hmm. Have you been using those?
Yeah, quite a bit actually. More so this year is when I started getting into those, and it's by far some of the best paint that I've actually sprayed.
Yeah, is it a lacquer paint, or what kind of paint is that?
It is a lacquer based paint. Oh, cool. Yeah, so it can be a little hot. They say spray it like a low PSI and just do very light coats to build it up. Because I actually learned this right off the bat. If you try to go too heavy with the color, it'll actually react with itself.
Oh, okay.
And kind of create like a crazing effect.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but if you go low air pressure, about maybe 20 PSI, and just build up the color, you know, several coats, it comes out looking really good.
Yeah. So you just hit it like a mist coat, let it dry for a bit, and then come back with another coat, and just like you say, just keep building up on it.
Exactly. They say I usually let stuff sit maybe for like 2 to 3 minutes in between coats. Because I also found out too, the longer you let stuff sit between coats, the harder it could be with trying to bring up the color, and it possibly might have a reaction as well. So yeah. It's as you know, spraying with like any type of automotive paint or higher grade paint, you always kind of have to look out for some of those deals, because they all react very differently with each other. You know?
No, yeah. It's like you just have to follow their tech sheet instructions pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get it going good. Yeah, because I saw they had a booth at NNOS. They were there. And yeah. I saw a lot of people picking up their stuff. I didn't pick anything up. I wanted to, but then at the time I was just kind of like, oh, I don't want to get into a new paint system yet. Like, let me kind of just keep using what I'm using. And then I want to try something else. As of lately, I've been using the Createx.
Paint. Okay.
I've been kind of messing with that, watching a lot of videos, but now, mm-hmm. At the same time, you know, I just want to try out all the different applications. As well, but that's one of them as well that's on the list, the splash paints.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it. You know, to me, paints are like, they're like build styles, basically. You know, you want to try a little bit of everything. I've worked with the Createx stuff before. It's a great system as well. They have some colors that, you know, you can't really do with, you know, with anything else. And being that they're water-based, they dry a lot quicker too. You know, so I like the Createx stuff as well. It's just, like I said, I kind of go all over the board too when it comes to paints.
Yeah. No, yeah. I was going to ask you too on one of your images on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Let me pull it up here. It's the charger, the orange one.
Oh, yeah.
And I like how you kept the emblem and you have it over with. Is that's bare metal foil, right, over it?
The little charger emblem?
Yeah. The scripture?
Yeah, but actually, bro, that's a photo etch piece.
Oh, man. That thing looks super clean.
Thanks, bro.
Yeah, because I've seen some people, like, leave the emblems where mm-hmm. they add, like, bare metal foil, and mm-hmm. then they keep painting it, but then they wipe it off with a little bit of, like, lacquer thinner.
Right.
There. So I was like, man, did he do that? When I was looking at your pictures, I was like, damn, it looks crazy.
Yeah, no, that I've done that method before, and it works out good. This one though, with the level of detail that I put into that charger, I was like, nah, I gotta go with photo etch scripts.
Yeah,
bring out that realism a little bit more. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, when you're working with photo etch, and you're cutting it out, do you tape it down so it doesn't fly off the tree?
Always.
No, always. Yeah, I've lost pieces like that.
Oh yeah, it's I've done the same, and I've just learned over the years. It's like, you know, you learn from trial and error, and you lose enough pieces, you're like, okay, I gotta just start taping this down.
Yeah. So
yeah, it's it can be tricky though, working with photo etch sometimes. Uh-huh. So
do you ever polish it or clean it beforehand before you take it off the tree?
Yes, actually I have. I don't know if you saw pictures of that 72 El Camino, excuse me, not 72, a 68 El Camino I did late last year. It has photo etch emblems on it, but they look chrome. And what I did beforehand was actually take and buff them out a little bit before I took them off the tree.
Nice. Do you use like a Dremel, like really lightly on there, or?
Yeah, Dremel with a little bit of a light polishing compound.
Mm-hmm.
Just on a low speed.
Yeah. Then imagine hitting it at the high speed. It just gets caught.
Oh, well, yeah. My day job, I work with a lot of like buffing wheels and polishing wheels, and I've tried stuff like that at high mm-hmm. speed. Yeah, it just, no, it doesn't end well.
Yeah. It ends really bad.
Yeah, pretty much.
Dang. How long do you take when you're doing a model build from beginning to end, like typically? How many months would you say?
Oh, man, that's a good question, actually, because every build's different. For example, that charger, that 70 charger, was actually about a year and a half for that car. You know, off and on here and there, and it was actually supposed to be done for Kansas City last year. And, you know, that's so... honestly, bro, I've done builds as quick as a month or two. And then I've had ones that go, like I said, like that about a year and a half. So it really, it just depends on a couple things, like how much detail do I want to get into with the build?
Yeah.
And then also too, how much time do I have and how much motivation do I have to get that particular build done?
Yeah. No, that's true.
And because I've done like the dedicated magazine, the monthly, you know, couple monthly build offs they have.
Mm-hmm.
I got into the 60 truck one last month, and I came so close to finishing, but I ran out of time and had problems with the chassis and everything. But as I took a step back and I'm like, yeah, I want to put so much more into this truck, but I just don't have the time. So let me step back and then I'll come back to it later on and build it more so and put all the detail that I want into it that I know I can do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of, like I said, when it comes to the build times, it's just a lot of factors that kind of come into it, you know?
No, yeah. Yeah, it's like right now I have maybe like 4 or 5 different bodies that I've been working on, and I'm just rotating like the body work, like I'm focusing all on this one, then I stop and then I get another one and I just keep going. And part of me, it makes me feel like, man, nothing's getting done, because I guess now I'm just like, I want to start painting already, but I can't, like, cause of the body work, right. It's not complete. So I keep having to just fill stuff in. But then, I took a break. Like I told myself, oh, let me just chill off of it for like a few days, you know? And then, and then I'll get back on it. And yeah, just waiting like those few days to just kind of refresh my mind. And then just to kind of focus on like, all right, you know what? Let me just pick out a couple and put in the work on these two and move forward with these. And then later I'll come back to these other cars, like just put them away for now, because yeah, then I'm not focusing 100% on, you know, one or two. I'm trying to spread all that out through like all of them.
Right. No, that's the thing too. Like, you know, people, I've talked to other builders and they're like, oh man, I got this going. You know, I want to try to get this done and like say this amount of time. And especially, and I tell them like, you know, well, take a step back and evaluate the build. You know, how much stuff do you have to do? How much stuff do you want to do on it? And like you said, especially when it comes to body work, which for me, you know, I love doing custom stuff, but man, I hate the body work stage.
Yeah.
Just all the sanding and primary, sanding, primary, making sure it's all, you know, good to go.
Mm-hmm.
But you talk to people and it's like, oh, I just got to rush through it to get it done. Like you said, to get it into paint. It's like, no, take a couple steps back and just go over it one more time. Or if you think you're done, look at it again before you go into color or whatever stage the build you're going into, because that one little extra step or time to look at something is going to make a big difference in the end.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, and I feel even, I don't know what's the right way to start with. I think because everybody starts their models, you know, differently. Like some people work on, just start off with the engine, the chassis, and then the body's like the last thing. Because I know back then for me, when I wasn't even doing no body work, I was just pretty much, the only body work I would do was just take off the flash off the body and then just give it like a light wet sand and then start painting it already. And
right.
While the body was drying, because I was using Tamiya rattle can paint, I would just let it sit for like a few days and then I would just start focusing on the engine and everything else. So pretty much by the time I had this completed, I can have the body all ready to go and then I could assemble it. But now it's almost like I put all that other stuff to the end. I just start focusing on the body. But I don't know. I'm having fun with it, but I did need to take a few days off for sure.
On there. Yeah. So, you know, I learned very early on I was only about 10 years ago, but, from some of my mentors that I learned from in California when I got heavy into building, was, you know, the patience and the taking your time with everything. Cause you know, when you first get into it or when, you know, you're all excited, you want to start, you want to put out the best thing you can, but you see, cause you see what everyone else is doing. Well, you don't realize a lot of times, you know, people took, you know, several months, if not years, to get to where they're at.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I learned at a very early on was patience and time, you know, time management with everything. So it definitely made me a better builder in the long run, you know?
Yeah. Right now I'm looking at that. That Ford GT from Tamiya.
Oh yeah.
That thing looks dope, man. Looks crazy. It looks like a real car.
Yeah, some of the shots I took, it was like, oh man, I need the perfect backdrop for it, you know. But thanks, bro. That was a fun build. That was actually a white box version, which means it was a pre-production kit
mm-hmm.
that I got. So before it even hit the stores, the local hobby shop we have out here got it in, and they called me up and said, hey, you want to build this for the shop? And I was like, okay, I've done a couple in the past before. I didn't know what this one was, though.
Mm-hmm.
Opened it up, and I'm like, oh, dang.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, for sure. And, yeah, it came out beautiful, man. The way that kit goes together, oh, dude, it's flawless, in my opinion.
Yeah, do you like the Tamiya kits more than the Revell, or is there kind of,
well,
like the difference?
Yeah, for mainly out of the box stuff, you can't beat Tamiya for any of it. I mean, because their stuff, like I said, just kind of basically falls together, you know. But for doing like a lot of detail work and stuff, I like Revell kits probably more so for that.
Mm-hmm.
Now AMT, they have some good ones as well, you know, as everyone kind of knows with some of the reissue, some of the like promo chassis and stuff can kind of be a pain, but you know, for doing like certain levels of detail and kit bashing and stuff, Revell is probably the best one that I like for doing that.
Nice. Is this the paint on this car? Is that splash paints as well?
Actually that one, that color that's on there, splash paints does have, but at the time I had already ordered it from actually Gravity Colors.
Oh, nice. That clear is blinging, dude. It's popping. It looks really nice.
Thanks, bro. I appreciate it. That I like to call it money green, but it's actually a Lamborghini color, a Lamborghini green.
Oh, nice. That's
on that. So, but yeah, that's it was cleared with two-part urethane clear coat. And then buffed and polished out. So that's what got the shine that you see on it.
When you buff and polish them, are you also using a Dremel, or are you just kind of doing it by hand?
You know what, bro? I've tried the Dremel method before, and I don't know if it's just because I don't have the right setting on mine, but every time I've tried the Dremel, I burn through my paint mm-hmm. with it. So everything I do polish-wise, whether it's color sand, wet sand, and buff and polish, that's all by hand.
Yeah. Yeah, because I've never done it with the Dremel. I feel like I would burn through it too. That's my fear.
Mm-hmm. Like, I've done test panels before, and it's like, you know, you always think, okay, you can go that little bit farther, and then that's that little bit farther that you end up burning through.
Yeah.
You know?
Dang. I remember one time I had this 62 Impala that mm-hmm. I was doing with Tamiya Rattlecam paint, and I had done the body more like this champagne kind of gold kind of color, and mm-hmm. then the roof was white, and finally I cleared the whole car. I was all happy about it. I was like, all right, I'm gonna like do the cut and buff and all that. And then right when I started getting into it, I started doing it by hand, and I went to the restroom. So I was like wet sanding it, and the lighting uh-huh. wasn't so great in there. So I just kept going and going and going, thinking like, oh yeah, like it's smooth. I got it. And then when I, uh-huh. when I stepped out of the restroom and I went out to the backyard where it was all nice and sunny, I could just see it right there in the roof. Like I just straight burned it. It looked all weird. I was like, dang. Oh, So I ended up putting the car away. I was just like, oh, nah. I don't want to work on it right now.
Right.
I put it away, moved on. And then not so long ago, I ended up pulling out that kit, like after a year or two. And I pulled it out, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, man, I forgot about this kit, like about what happened. So I'm all like analyzing it. I'm already thinking like, man, I think I'm going to end up sanding off just the whole roof itself, uh-huh. and then just restarting that, but keeping still the body, the color of the body, because I really like it. Hopefully that'll be one that I'll do sometime this year.
For sure. That's the thing. I've come across that before, you know, kits that I put away because of whatever issue I had and bring them back out. And it's kind of a nice feeling sometimes, like, oh yeah, I forgot I did that. Or, you know, I have a 62 Impala, as funny you mentioned that, I have a 62 Impala myself right now that I've had on the shelf for quite a while. And I just pulled it back out the other day to look at it, and I forgot that I had it base coated, and then I had laid out a bunch of patterns on it with tape.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, oh shoot, I forgot I had this, and it's been sitting on the shelf for like a year with just the tape. With the patterns are still there, the tape's still there.
The tape, it hasn't even rolled up or nothing. It's still there, intact. That's cool.
It's like, man, I really need to get back on this, but. You know, I got too many other projects right now.
Yeah. Do you keep like all your model cars that you finished or work in progress in the same room, like where your workbench is?
Yeah. Actually, a lot of my finished ones are in the, they're in clear cases, mm-hmm. And they're sitting on top of my workbench, and like all the progress, it's kind of crazy, man. We have a basement here at the house that me and my fiance live in, and it's kind of split. Like she has half the basement and I have half the basement.
Mm-hmm.
So my corner is all just models and this and that, like project kits are right next to the workbench. The stuff that I'm not working on or that's just waiting is on bookshelves and stuff. And it's kind of a crazy setup. If you see it, I'll have to take a picture of it one day and post it up.
Yeah.
When it's a little cleaner.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. Right where I'm living at right now, with my girlfriend, like one of the rooms, it was funny. Cause we were supposed to kind of the same kind of deal, like split it. Like, we'll have our stuff in there, but then I have my desk where I have all my equipment set up. But then I was like, man, where am I going to work on my model cars? So then I just ended up setting up like another secondary table against the wall. And mm-hmm. little by little, I started bringing more of my stuff in. So it's almost like I just took over this room pretty much. There's only like a small little section with her stuff.
Right.
And majority, it's all my stuff right here. So I have like the workbench where I work on all my projects, all my tools and stuff is in there. Mm-hmm. And all my equipment's on the next desk, and then in the closet. I mean, that's where I keep all the whatever model kits that I'm currently excited about that I want to work on, and then everything else, like the stash I have, I keep it back at my parents' house.
Okay,
like it's way over there. So whenever I don't know, I'm just like, man, I want to work on this, and then I go over there, and then I just pull out that one out of the garage and I bring it back over here.
Yep. I remember doing that after, when I first moved out here, I didn't even have an apartment for the first month that I was living out here. And so I couldn't bring anything with me really. And all my stuff was at my parents' house. And, you know, little by little, as I started, okay, I got an apartment and then I moved up to a bigger apartment, and you know, eventually we're in a townhouse right now, but and little by little, I go to my parents, when they were in California, and now they live in Texas, but, I would go to their house, like you said, and just go through the boxes like, oh yeah, okay, I think I can do something with that one, or, hey, I want to do that one, or, you know, something like that, and bring them back with me.
Yeah.
You know, so
I wish I had the space, but I don't, like, to bring all those kids over here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, my lady would be like, what the heck? What's all this? When'd you buy this? It's too much.
Too much stuff. It's a give and take relationship when it comes to that, bro. I know that because, you know, my fiance definitely supports what I do and everything, and she's even built a little bit too. But it's kind of the same thing. Like, okay, you got enough kits, and then it's like I try to sneak one more in. You know, it's like, you know, and it's like you got so many. Eventually, everything blends together. But
yeah,
you know, I know the feeling though. It's hard though too, because I have to do all my paint, like all my stuff set up in the basement, but like I have to do all my paint work outside.
Yeah. So I was gonna get into that too with painting. So, what's normally the weather out there, like the conditions?
Well, let's see. Like right now, for example, it is 54 and sunny outside. And we're finally just getting into spring, but honestly, on any given day, dude, we can start out at like 30 degrees and then get up to like 80 by the afternoon.
Yeah. Oh, dang. Yeah.
It's, the weather here, they like to say in the Midwest, if you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes, it'll change.
Mm-hmm.
That's a true statement, bro. Like I've been days where it's been like, the reverse has been like 75, and then like 2 hours later, it's down to like 40.
Wow. Yeah. So, that's a big change.
It is. And, you know, and then with rain and everything, it can be a factor. But especially during the wintertime, when we get snow out here, that's another issue sometimes. So it's, you never know what you're going to get from day to day.
Yeah, so mostly let's say you have your cars are ready, like the body work's ready and everything, and you're getting ready to paint. Are you always kind of just checking like the weather report, or just kind of looking out when you have the free time, you know, to be like, I'm hoping that I can paint this today?
Right. Honestly, bro, I'll paint in any condition as long as it's not raining.
Mm-hmm.
Because out here, I've had to adapt to, okay, it's overcast and it's 50 degrees. It's a little chilly. Now, okay, as long as it's not raining, I'm going to go paint. Or, hey, it's the summertime. It's 95 degrees and the humidity level, God forbid, is not at 100%. I'm going to go paint. You know, the only time I really don't paint is when it's raining outside. If I have the free time, so.
Yeah, dang. And what about when it's like windy? Do you kind of stay away from that too?
Yeah, wind is another factor as well, because there's nothing like trying to go spray the paint and all of a sudden it just blows away from the body and nothing ever hits the body.
Yeah, I've had that happen with Rattlecan one time. I was at the back of the shop where I work. And right there in the back, it's like a little square, little area where the wind's going to be the only factor that it's going to, like, once it starts going in there, it just starts swirling into circles in that little area. But other than that, like, nothing moves, like, everything's all settled, right? So
right.
I was like, oh, dope, I already have my paint, it's all shook up, I'm ready, I have the car ready on its Tamiya stand. And we're going to close right now at work. So right when I close, I'm going to go back there and start spraying this car, laying coats, and then I'm going to go home. And I just remember being back there and then just starting to shoot the car. And then, boom, it starts getting all windy.
Yep.
And it sucked because you can, like, you know, like, the wind comes and it goes for, like, a split second or two. And I was just standing there hoping, like, all right, right now the wind's gonna just chill for a little bit for like a second or two, and I'm gonna spray it. And then once in a while, I would get those sprays in, but then the rest, nah, I would see the spray just even come back at me. It was just going in all these directions, and I was like, man, this sucks. Like, it just kind of ruined it right there. I had to stop. So the car had like, it was just like overspray. Pretty much on the car.
Basically, yeah. I've had the same issue before, and it sucks, especially like if you're trying to clear coat something and you're trying to airbrush, and like with the urethane, you know, once you mix that stuff, you have to spray it. Otherwise it's just going to harden.
Yeah.
So you can't wait. So it's like, if it's a little windy out, I probably won't do any clear coat work, but for color wise, you know, I can make the attempt a little bit if it's windy.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what though, man, the biggest factor out here, and that I've actually kind of from every, even the people that have lived here all their life, that build models, they look at me funny when I say I'll paint even when it's super cold outside, and I get the same results that I get with paint jobs I do in the springtime or summer.
Yeah. Nice.
You know, because like, I think
how'd you do that?
Right, because I think you had asked me when we were talking the one time that, you know, with the cold, you know, how cold does it get here? And especially like if I'm trying to do something for like Grand National Show, which is in January, you know, I have to paint something probably as early as like October, November out here to let it sit if I want to, you know, if I get an idea. And sometimes I'll paint, the lowest temperature I've ever painted in is 12 degrees.
Damn, that's super low. I've never even been in 12 degrees. I'd be super cold.
Yeah, that, luckily that's only for maybe like 1 or 2 months out of the year. And that's usually at the beginning of the year. So we don't have to worry about that too much. But, but yeah, that's the lowest I painted in. And I've gotten results to where I haven't even had to buff or polish anything.
Yeah. Wow.
And people are like, no, that's not possible. The paint doesn't work in, you know, below 50 degree or 50, whatever, you know, temperature spec they have. And no, I beg to differ on that, because I've had the results and I've posted results, you know, at that time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And people are just like, there's no way.
Yeah. Now you got to make it work.
You have to.
Yeah.
You have to. But yeah, it's crazy. I won't say it's probably the most ideal conditions to paint in, but, you know, like you just said, you have to adapt. And that was one thing I had to learn, because we don't have the nice 70 degree weather almost all year round like California does.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Like for us right now, it hasn't been raining anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That was one thing. Like, first, we're like, oh, it's not raining anymore. You know, everyone's tripping out on that. And then as soon as we start getting rain, now we're like, oh, this is cool. But then this is too much. Now I want it to go away. And
yeah.
Right now, it's pretty nice now to go paint and stuff. It's starting to get warm. But, you know, it's just like, you know, like you adapt to anything, how it's coming up. And over here, it doesn't get too crazy. Like, you can still, you know, you get paint at 60 degrees, and then most everyone's painting at like 70 degrees, 80 degrees.
Right.
But yeah, like I recently purchased a little spray booth, another Masters Airbrush spray booth. And I want to, the reason why this is the second one I own, I wanted to get another one was because I want to like be able to spray stuff indoors with the Createx stuff. Just have it. I just want to try it out in here, and then if I need to clear it, I'll do it back in Oxnard at my parents' house. I'll do it out there.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's kind of the just so this way, when I'm here, because it's like a 45 or 40 minute commute from where I'm living at right now in Simi Valley all the way over there. So sometimes there's weekends where I just want to chill out here at my house, and but I want to paint, and it's like if I have to paint, I have to drive all the way over there. And and I'm kind of like, nah, I kind of just want to do it all here, you know? I know I can't do everything, but at least something.
Right. And that's the biggest thing too. And when I first started building it, that was kind of the same way I was. I didn't have an airbrush set up, but I learned how to airbrush from Anthony Rios, one of the big names out there in California. Shout out to him, by the way.
Nice.
He taught me a lot with the airbrush, and it was like he lives in the city industry area out there in Southern California. And from my house to his house, where I was living at the time, was about 30, 35 minute drive, you know, minus whatever traffic was. But it was the same thing. Like if I painted something with a rattle cam, but I wanted to clear coat it with urethane, I went over to his house and it was like, okay, I go over one night and then come back. And it's like, okay, I got to go over the next night to re-clear it again. And yeah, I understand that, where some days it's like, nah, I want to be able to do everything at home. And luckily I'm able to do that now, but yeah, it's not fun when you got to go back and forth.
Yeah. Like I was excited when we were going to get this spot here, when they said that it comes with the garage as well and all this stuff for your car. And I was like, oh, that's dope. Like there's, you know, I'm going to probably use that garage as like a workspace.
Right.
And then when we're doing the walkthrough, they take us like, oh, it's over here. Let's open it up. And I'm like, oh, whack. Like it's a shared garage pretty much. Like, it's you and then whatever other tenant is, like, you share it with them. And even that, like, they're inside. Once you're inside, there's no walls, like, dividing. So it's basically, like, one huge, large garage. But All it is just the doors that open up for each different, car port and stuff.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Like, if you turn left or right, you can see, like, everybody's stuff. Like all over there. Wow. And I'm like, well, that's weird. Like no privacy. And then I don't even leave stuff in there. Like I just park my car and that's it. I don't leave nothing in there. But you could tell everybody's been living there for a long time. Everyone respects each other's stuff. But
right. But
still nah. And then I started to think, imagine if I start spraying stuff in there, all the overspray just starts landing on their stuff.
Yeah, that's a whole ordeal you don't want to deal with, man.
Yeah, nah. So I'm like, nah. So I was like, man, for now I'm gonna have to just keep it like that, going back and forth for a bit. But I little by little I want to start doing stuff in here as well with paint.
Oh yeah,
because it's so much easier, you know. You work a lot faster too.
Oh yeah, definitely, and especially with like you said, with the Createx and stuff like that, you can do it. It dries quick and everything, and yeah, it's nice. And some days I wish I wasn't so heavy into like the lacquer based stuff, so I could just get stuff done quicker. But You know, it's sometimes the weight is worth the results. So
yeah, and then the colors too. Like you said, like there's certain colors that are not available, or there's always a brand that has like a color that you're like, man, that thing's bad. I want that color.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. It's it's never, like I said, that's why I go so all over the place with paints, because there's so many different colors out there that, you know, especially if you're doing pattern paint jobs and stuff like that with low riders, you don't want just like two or three variations of one color. You want different colors across the board, you know.
Yeah.
So
no, yeah. I really love that 60 Impala that you did, that green one.
Oh yeah. Thanks, bro.
That thing's tight. It looks super clean. That's what I mean. All your cars look really clean.
I appreciate that. I try just to build as clean as I can, you know, just more. I'm more of the, like, yeah, I put a lot of detail into my stuff, but it's more about the cleanliness and the simplicity of everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like on that 60, for example, you know, it's just a straight green color paint job. It's got it's detailed, wired, all that stuff with the hydraulics. It's got seat belts in it, you know, but the paint job's just real straight laced and clean. And that's kind of more what I've been known for, is just the cleanliness of the overall of my builds like that.
Yeah. It looks, I'm looking at it right now on my computer.
Mm-hmm.
Like the engine and everything, the seat belts and the interior. Yeah, I think it's tight.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm trying to build a little bit more with more lowriders now, because there was a while where I was building quite a few, and then like we talked about, I got burned out on doing lowriders and stuff. But now I'm trying to come back and do a little bit more. Like I just started working on a 64 doing body work on that. And then, trying to, like everybody does, I'm trying to do, you know, each specific year of Impala and stuff. And eventually I'll get to that, but you know, it's just trying to get back more with the lowrider stuff right now too. So
yeah. Yeah. Right now I've been more into like the, like a kick with the lead sled or custom cars.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I know I'm always going to jump back on like doing the lowrider cars, but the custom cars have been catching my attention a lot just from seeing them in magazines and on, on Instagram, just checking the hashtags and just kind of just swiping away like, wow, look at that. Seeing all these different cars. But there was a time that I did get burned out a bit with the Impalas just because I kept doing like the same year, like a 63 or a 64. And and I just was like, nah, I need to switch it up. I need to try something else.
Definitely.
But I will. I recently picked up that 65 Riviera.
Yeah.
The AMT. The Hobby Lobby in Oxnard just got it. They didn't have it. They were getting everything else in, but that was one car. I was seeing it on online and at hobby shops. And I was like, I know I'm going to get that car. I'll get it later. And then eventually I pop in and they have it. So I was like, oh, perfect. Picked it up. I ended up picking up kind of late though. Not in time for the build off with Dedicated magazine, but at the same time, it would have been kind of tough for me to try it. I could have tried it, but I don't know if I would have finished it just because of the timing and at work, like I'll be busy with work next month, really heavy.
Okay.
I don't know. But I like the time frame though. They do give you enough time.
To
work on that.
Yeah, 2 months is definitely a good length of time for I think a build off, and I'm in the 65 Ribby build off as well. I said, you know what, I'm gonna try and finish it since I didn't get the 60 truck done. But I'm actually just kind of stuck with what direction I want to go in with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know it started this past Monday, but I've been sitting on my bench for the last 4 days looking at it like, what am I gonna do with this thing?
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those builds. It's like, man, I like the body style, but I just don't know what I want to do.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm staring at the box right now. It's like on top of my my toolbox, and I'm just like looking at it, and I haven't even opened it yet. And that's the thing. I try to keep them sealed until I know that I have the time and I'm ready to open them. But then sometimes I'm like, I just want to see what's inside, you know?
Oh yeah, I've definitely done that before, and it's hard, man. Especially if you got like custom parts and stuff, you want to see what they look like to see if you can use them on something else, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's I go through the same thing, dude. I think almost everything I got is pretty much open sealed now. It's not sealed anymore.
Uh-huh.
You know,
they're all just open. Yeah. I have a lot of open ones. I still have a lot of ones that are not even complete. Like I started painting them and everything, and then, I just put them away.
Yeah. That's another thing too. Like I think, God, I don't know how many bodies or kits like that I have. It's like, I'll start the paint work or process or start something on and then just put them back, 'cause I don't feel like working on it, or I got a different idea or something else takes priority, you know? But, like for example, right now with the Heartland National Show coming up in June, I think on my bench right now, I have, let's see, two, three, probably about four or five different builds I'm trying to get done for that show, just because it's probably one of the last ones I'm doing for until after I get married in August. But it's crazy though, 'cause you sit back and look at it, it's like, man, you have the time, like it's not until June, but here it's going to be, you know, May here in a week or so. And next thing you know, time flies by super quick and you lost all that time.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah. Do you kind of trip out how, like, you know, like you've been doing models for a long time, like you followed, you know, like the scene and everything, been a part of it, but does it kind of, when you compare like back then to now, as far as like how much information is out now, how much like aftermarket products are out. Like, do you trip out on kind of like the change from like then to now?
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, back then it was, you know, we had, like, I had some reference material and stuff, and, you know, the internet was still not, was still, you know, the place to go, but it didn't have all the information that it, like, you can find now. And same thing with the parts. I mean, it was mainly just going to Pegasus for whatever they had and whatever parts I could get from there. I, you know, ordering stuff online wasn't a big thing back then. And, you know, and now it's just like, it's amazing how much stuff is at your disposal.
Mm-hmm.
For everything.
Yeah. I think about it and I feel like, I think like, I wonder how it's going to be like 5 years from now or even 10, when there's even, when we're getting hit with so much product information, aftermarket stuff, new independent companies and whatnot. And it's like, are we going to soak it all in, or are we going to like take it for granted, you know, and just be like, ah, oh, like that's the new thing, whatever. Cause, I know, like back then when, like referencing like to music, like I had friends who were coming out with like albums, like, or even EPs that have like 4 or 5 tracks. Right. And they would put them up online. And it would be one of those things where at the time back then, where we weren't being hit with so much music, it was just like, oh, this is my new album, check it out. And you would take the time, you would check it out. And then like a year later, he would come out with a new one. But then later we started coming out, like these websites, like blog sites started popping up. And it's like every week there was like a new album coming out. Like,
okay.
And then more stuff started coming out. Like every day, it went from once a week to now every day a new album was coming out from different people. And we were like, oh, dang. Like, you download everything, but then you're like, I don't even have time like to listen to all this stuff. It's too much music.
You can't keep up with everything.
Yeah, nah. So we were just like friends would be like, did you hear my album? I'm like, dude, not yet, bro. I still got to get through 3 of them to get to yours. Cause I just, everything keeps coming out. And then it just got to a point where now we had so much music, and then we were like kind of taking it for granted. We just didn't have the time to hear it either. And we're just like, ah, it's there, you know? And then we just kind of moved on. And, but there was a point where there wasn't a lot of MP3s or anything. And then it just got crazy. Like now, and then I don't know, I sometimes try to think about that. Like if something like that will happen, if, you know, it's like right now you get an aftermarket part and it's rare and you only get 1 of or 2 of.
Right.
You're like, oh man, I can't believe I have this, you know, like you take care of it, you use it. But then what if in the future, you know, you end up with like 50 of those or 100 of them? Like, is it just going to become some like, like regular thing you just kind of, it's not the same feeling, you know?
No, it's not like, you know, I think a good representation of that would be like the company Model House before they went out of business. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's like, you know, they produce the resin bodies, their resin, the white wall tires and stuff that now, since they're out of business, is more of a coveted thing now. And before, though, it was like, oh, it's there, you know, we can always order it or something like that, or, you know, and now they're gone. I think it's kind of the reverse of that, to where now everybody wants them, but they can't find them. But the prices are going up so high that for like the tires and some of the bodies and stuff, it's like, okay, if anyone goes and reproduces those off of their molds or whatever, what's it going to do for the industry later on? You know, so it's hard to say what's going to happen, like you said, 5 or 10 years from now, but hopefully everything will kind of be still on a resurgence. Cause that was the biggest thing I noticed from like, 2011 to like last 2 years or so, 2017, is the resurgence with model building and everything has gotten has come back up now. Like, you see more people getting into it. You see more like events or people putting on just like, not even shows, but like, hey, let's get together and hang out and, you know, bring stuff out or, you know, work on something like that. I think it's, you're seeing a lot more of that now, which is good, because there was a while where, heck, 5-10 years previous that we didn't know if model building was going to continue, you know, the way that it is. So it's hard to say.
No, yeah, it's like I've been seeing people post online that they're back building after like 10, 20 years, mm-hmm. you know, and it's cool to see that they're back, you know, on right. it. I'm sure it gives them some nostalgic feeling and some calmness too when they're doing it, you know.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I've had people out here too that they look at the stuff that I build, or they look at, you know, somebody else's build that I show them. They're like, wow, I didn't know you could do that. Or I didn't know that this stuff was available, because they've been out of the loop for so long. And it's like, yeah. And next thing you know, they're getting back into it and starting to do more than what they used to. And they find a lot of joy and a lot of happiness in it, you know? And I think that's the biggest thing, is just have fun with it, you know? Do what you like and build the way that you want to, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because, you know, yeah, there's friends that I hang out with out here. They don't build model cars, but when they see it, they're like, man, I want to, like, they want to try it. But mm-hmm. but they're like, nah, but then I got to buy all this equipment and stuff. And I'm like, nah, dude, just buy a kit, you know, just get that and bring it over. Like, I have the paints, I have my tools, like, we could just get together and work on stuff, and then I'll let you, yeah. you paint it, you know, like yeah. you can use my stuff. Yeah. Like, it's all good. And yeah, it's like, I'm, it's always nice when you have those, like, when you meet up with your friends and build stuff together.
Right.
Cause it's just like, you're sitting down with each other, but you're in your zone. Like, you're staring at your model and you're doing, but you're still like, you're having a conversation.
Right. About, exactly.
And then it goes by fast. And then if you get stuck somewhere, you know, you ask your friend, like, oh, what do you think I should do right here? Or how do I get around this?
You know? Yep. Exactly. And that's the way it used to be back in the day when I first got into model building as a competitive level, I guess you can say, from just not just building out of the box, but, you know, we'd hang out at like Anthony Rios's house, and a lot of guys from the Model Car Club MCBA, which is the club that I'm a part of. You know, back in the day, we'd always have like almost every other weekend a build session, or, hey, you know, so-and-so is going to have a barbecue or their house and bring out some stuff to work on and build, and, you know, just talk about all the different stuff and different techniques. And that's how I learned quite a bit too. Was yeah. from stuff like that. So
that's right.
So it's cool. It's cool to see that stuff coming back as a resurgence. And I think the support too, like, of all the different shows out there, and with social media, with like Instagram, you know, posting everything coming up and stuff like that. I think it's pretty cool that it seems to be coming back.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I feel like with Instagram, it helps a lot too. Cause every, you know, all of us have to create a name on Instagram, your @, and then, you know, mm-hmm. you start following people, they start following you back. And then little by little, like, the work that you're posting, people start to get now familiar with your work. They start to like what you're doing, or even become a fan of what you're doing. You know, that at some point, people are like, oh yeah, like, you know, I follow this person, like, everybody's like someone in the Instagram world. And then finally you start to realize, like, man, I talk to all these people. Like, now you're feeling that vibe of a community.
Right.
And then eventually everyone's just waiting for that show to come up, for the gathering, you know?
And, exactly.
And then, and it sucks when you can't make it. You're like, dang, especially when you start seeing pictures of the show, you know, after.
Right.
You feel like you missed out on so much.
Yep. And that's one of the biggest things too, Edgar, from, from moving out here is like, you know, I was used to in California doing maybe 10, 11 shows a year just in California alone. And now to moving out here where I don't do as many shows a year or hangouts or whatever. And I see the photos from California of all the different shows now that are, you know, like the Low Ballers meet and what's the one coming up in May out there? SoCal Open. Like I used to go to that show back in the day and stuff. And it's like, man, I really wish I could get out there more to go to some of these things because I see I see the pictures and it's like, man, there's some really cool stuff out there. You know? And eventually, hopefully I can make it out to some of those throughout the different years, but you know, it'd be cool.
Coming up, like it's like this month, there wasn't really much going on. I know that, coming up, people are really excited about a few shows, like the SoCal Open is one of them in Southern California. And then that'll be in May. And then in June 15th, I know everyone's excited about the Low Ballers meet that they're going to be doing as well. And then also in June, there's going to be another show, but it's going to be in Northern California.
Okay.
And that one's done by the Central Coast Classic. And this is the second time they're doing their show, but they do it at an event that's thrown by Dead End Magazine. So it's like a real like one-on-one scale car show, and then they have their section for the model cars.
Okay, nice.
So the two in the south and down south, and then the one up north are like the upcoming ones like for this summer.
Okay.
That people are like, you know, I see a lot of people like getting their stuff ready for that.
Right.
Or when I'm talking to people, they'll mention it like, oh man, I'm getting my cars ready for that, for those events.
Right.
But yeah, man, it's cause it would have been cool if they were pretty close together, because then for you, you know, to come out, you know, you make it a trip, you get to go to not just one show, but more, you know, if they were all like pretty tight and pretty together.
Exactly.
But being so spread out, it's like, it can get expensive, you know, flying out every time.
Oh yeah. Real quick. It adds up. It's not even just the flying. It's just, you know, depending on how long you're going to stay, like say out in California too. I mean, it all adds up, mm-hmm. but like for the SoCal Open, like I was looking at the flyer and reading the way that Art kind of redid the show with some of the categories and stuff now. And I actually think I might actually be sending out a couple of my tuner cars for that show.
Yeah, that's another cool thing that people do is send out their, like if they can't make it, at least send your car out to one of your buddies, one of your friends, and then, you know, they'll bring it out and everything and then just have it sent out, because even though you're not there, but your cars are there and at least some people get to see them in person now.
Exactly. It's a kind of, yeah, representing who you are. And they're like, oh, hey, I seen that on Instagram and now I get to see it in person.
Yeah.
You know, even if you're not there, which is cool. So mm-hmm. Yeah, if you make it out to the SoCal Open, take a look. Cause I'll probably be sending out my Honda Civic and my Acura Integra I had the Civic out at Grand National mm-hmm. in January. And I don't know if you remember seeing that one or not, but I'll probably be sending those two out because those will be the safest ones I can send without too many parts getting broken off of them, hopefully.
Yeah. So, but imagine with the antennas or anything getting broken off, that would suck. Be like, oh man.
Luckily my friend that I sent them out to, he would know how to reattach them and stuff, but still at the same time, it's like, man. That's going to be a nerve wracking like 3 days while they're in the mail. So,
yeah, no, definitely. You're like, oh, checking the tracking. Is it there yet? And then making sure that the box or anything happened, you know, get like crushed or anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
But no, that's always cool. Yeah, I plan on being there early in the morning to the show. I'm definitely going to be recording like videos and stuff. But I want to kind of, be able to capture when people are showing up, people are setting up, like kind of record a little bit of the behind the scenes in a way, when people are getting ready and everything. And then just kind of, because I know we tend to film or document like the close-ups of the cars and everything, but I kind of just want to show, I want to record something else and then add it to that. So then this way it kind of gives you that feel like if you were there.
Right.
At the show. And the thing too is that Sunday I'm supposed to work too. So I'm trying to see what's up. So this way I can be there in the morning and then go to work, you know, like from there. But I do want to spend some time there though. I don't want to just, like before, if I didn't have, I'd be there all day, you know?
Right.
But it's like, I have a feeling I might have to go in at 11 or noon.
Oh, man.
So we'll see. But I'm going to try to be there as early as possible. That place from my house, it's probably about a 15-10 minute drive.
That's not so bad.
Especially on a Sunday, like early morning, it's going to, like, there's going to be no cars headed over there like that, like traffic. Because they get, right here on the 118, it could get pretty packed sometimes, but it's going to be cool. Like, just show up and chill. Last year it was fun. That show was really cool. There was a big turnout at that show last year. So I'm expecting there's going to be a lot of people for this one as well, too.
Yeah, I hope so, man, because I know when Art took that show over, he had a good vision for it and everything. And, you know, and that's the reason why I want to send a couple cars out, is just to support the show. And, you know, hey, I can't be there in person, but hey, I'm still representing and put a couple more cars out on the table for the count, you know?
Yeah.
So.
That's pretty cool. What's next for you as of, let's say, what is it that you want to learn that you have not learned yet?
Oh man, you're coming up with some good questions today, man. I think one thing that I want to learn a little bit more on is that I've done in the past, but not to the level that I know I can probably do, is doing some scratch building stuff. Mm-hmm. Custom frames and stuff for trucks, or doing like custom body work where you have to, you know, scratch build stuff and everything. I think a lot along those lines, because there's quite a bit that I've done already, but scratch building is one area that I kind of lacked in just learning more of right now. So I'd say scratch building.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Nice. Yeah. I've been messing with that a little bit, not like too much, like all crazy, but just a little bit. It's fun. I mean, I have been buying a lot of like styrene or like the tubes and all the different size pieces of styrene, and just now I have like a little box full of just flat sheets and different things to create stuff.
Right.
Like with it. It was funny because at work there was a lot like this like light switch that slides from side to side, and the thing ended up like breaking off, and then we lost it, the switch. So then I was like, man, you know, what are we going to do? So we just had to kind of use like some kind of like little wooden stick to just stick it in there and slide it side to side to turn off the light. And I mean, it looked all sketchy, you know, like, man, am I going to get electrocuted? Like sticking this thing in here. So then in the other room, I ended up taking off the switch off of that one. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at it, and it's just a plastic little piece. And I was like, I bet I can scratch build that, you know, with the styrene. So then, the next day I brought over my little box, my little case with all the pieces of styrene, and I ended up, getting it really close. That I ended up using my glue and the CA glue and everything, and ended up gluing that thing. So we got it up and running. It was cool. And I showed it to my dad, and I was like, dang, I guess the modeling stuff paid off right here. You know, and he was like, what the heck? Like, you made that with the, am I, yeah, with the styrene, just gluing them to the sides and then sanding it. Yep. To match it and everything. And then it looked cool. Like, you wouldn't even be able to tell. And I just kind of put everything back in there, and I didn't tell anybody who was, like, the other people that were working there. So they would just walk in. They weren't even paying attention. They would just walk in and turn it on. They probably thought we bought, like, a whole new thing, a new switch or anything. But that,
that's awesome.
That helped right there with that.
Yeah.
But no, it's fun. Like, it is fun with it. I still feel like I'm lacking in a lot of stuff, but little by little with each build, you know, kind of getting there.
Right. No, and that's the thing, man. You learn from every build that you do, not just the people you're around, but every build that you do, you learn little by little. Okay, hey, this is what I want to do next, or this is what I want to try to do this, so I'm going to do it on this particular build. You know, it's and then too, just asking questions of people. You know, like I tell people all the time, if they got a question or something, they want to know how I did something or what's the best way to do this, you know, just ask. And little by little, you'll learn more in those areas that you're lacking. And that's cool, man. I mean, you know, modeling is always a learning process every day. That's what I found, you know.
No, it is. But you know, it's crazy how it's such a small little thing you're doing, but it's like it shows you so much in a bigger picture.
Exactly. Yeah, it's amazing. Like you said, sometimes it comes in handy where you never thought it would.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's actually funny because that's how I got the job that I'm currently working right now. That's how I got into that job, was through model building, if you can believe that.
Damn. So. That's tight.
So yeah, you never know, man. It's a lot of people underestimate the hobby, I think, but it's good for it's a great hobby to get into. Anybody listening who wants to try it, just, you know, like you said, buy a kit and just start from there.
Yeah, you need just basic tools, you know. And and over time, once you feel like, all right, I really want to dive into this even in more in depth, and that's when little by little you start, you know, getting more tools and more tools. And then next thing you know, you have everything you need
right
in front of you. And, and you just keep working at it. Cause yeah, every time I look at my stuff, I go, man, there's so many, tools I have, but then it's like, it's cool that they're just at an arm's reach, like whatever I need, boom, I'll just do it there. But it took time though. I didn't even know that I would even need that tool. I didn't even know what that tool did. I didn't even know what a pin vise, like for the longest. I remember like I would see holes being drilled and I was always thinking like, are they using like just like a drill with a small little like a bit size on there?
Right.
And then I started to see videos with people doing it with the hand, with the pin vise. And I'm like, oh, that's what that is. I didn't even know what that was, you know, in the beginning. And you end up picking one up, and then next thing you know, you fall in love with that thing. Now I have like, I think like four of those.
Yep. You find out you get more and more stuff as you learn about it, and you keep having, you can't have just one. You got to have like two or three of the same tool. Cause you never know, you know, you got one drill or one pin vise with one size drill bit in it, and then another one. So you don't have to keep changing it back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, And that's cool because that's like we're working at Pegasus back in the day. That's where I learned a lot about all the different tools and stuff. Just when it was like slower days, kind of looking at the boards and what tools did what, you know, and just learning. And that's how I got a whole bunch of tools just from looking and watching. And I bought a bunch of tools from there. And, you know, they're still the same tools that I use to this day.
Yeah. It's like, as long as you take care of them, they'll last you for a long time.
Exactly. Yep. Just like a car. Hopefully. Anyway.
No. Yeah. That's tight. And This year, you're not sure if you're going to come back to California, maybe until next year?
Yeah, this year, I think anything California-wise, I think I'm pretty much done this year. But I am more than probably about 98% sure that I'll be back for the Grand National Show next year in out there at Pomona. So, I try never to miss that show if I can, so... But I'll be having a bunch of posts from different shows out here, in the next coming months too. I'll post some pictures up from some of those shows as well. So
nice. And is there anybody out there that you want to give a shout out to?
A couple people. Like I said, guys that helped me back in the day with building, Anthony Rios and. Al Camacho, Santiago, Mr. 116th. He was a big influence and helping my stuff back in the day. Just a lot of those guys, and even on Instagram too now, like Vision 124. Shout out to him for all his input on some of my tuner builds and everything. And it's everybody's been really helpful throughout the whole modeling time and career that I've had so far. So
nice. That's awesome. And if anybody wants to follow Wes, you could find him on Instagram. It's at Wes_S_scalebuilds.
Yep.
There you go. And man, this was cool. I know when we had a met up over there at the Grand National Show, we were like, we should do a podcast. And I was like, hell yeah, let's do it. I wanted to get you on here, and it was fun, man. It was fun.
Yeah.
chopping it up. We'll have to do this again in the future.
Yeah, for sure. Next time, give you some of the stories from back in the day at Pegasus, man, with Joe and everybody.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of stories, man, from back in the day that would probably be pretty. A lot of people probably want to hear. So.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And maybe by then what I would love to have too is in the future, we'll do like a in-person like podcast thing too.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. Like when you visit, when you'll be out here in California, we could link up and stuff. That'd be tight. And then we could do an in-person. That's the goal. That's the direction where I want to make the podcast go, so this way it's being streamed live as well, and at the same time have the guests in person.
Nice. Yeah, that'd be awesome. That'd be awesome, Edgar. I would love to do that eventually when we would get hooked up like that, so that'd be cool.
Yeah, and also thank you. I know I purchased that Fleet Line from you a while back, but thanks for hooking it up. That extra body in there, that was dope.
Yeah, for sure, man. I can't wait to see what you come up with for that.
Yeah, that's one model car I didn't even have in my collection. So now, and when I was looking, I was like, man, this thing's beautiful. I love it. So I'll have to I'll keep you posted on that one.
Yeah, for sure, man. And also one more, I'd like just to do a shout out to, I didn't do earlier, to Dedicated Magazine. Willie and David and all the crew on that for what they're doing for the hobby and bringing everything back, and with the shows and pictures and stuff. And it's really cool what they're doing too.
Yeah. They're definitely, adding a lot to the plate where like people are just like they're motivating so many people too.
Exactly.
With that.
That's it.
That's dope.
Yeah. It's a great thing to see. So shout out to them too. And, thanks for everything that they're doing as well. So,
nice.
It's cool.
Well, man, it was a pleasure talking to you, Wes.
Yep, same here, Edgar.
Yeah,
it's fun.
We'll keep in touch, and I'll let you get back to building.
Yeah, for sure, man, and we'll do this again. It was fun. I enjoyed it. So,
cool. All right, bro. Well, you have a good day.
Yeah, you too, man.
All right, peace.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Super Cooper. Word up, man.